comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hello, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth, and it's the show where you matter. And you know, some people I know, especially new listeners, think, well, that's just a cliche he says. But no, it's really, really the truth. You will discover here at The Kevin Smith Show that we're pretty much like a family. And if you're brand new, this is your first time to listen to us, welcome to the family. We're glad to have you. And those of you who are regulars, we're delighted you're here too. I don't want to leave anybody out. We have a free weekly newsletter here at The Kevin Smith Show. It is called The K-Files, and there's no reason not to get it because it's free. There are lots of reasons to get it because it's free and it is really a good publication. It always has the inside scoop, what's going on here at the show. And so, again, since it's free, why not, right? You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. Just go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. And click where it says K-Files. You can subscribe right there, and we'll be glad to send it to you. Here at The Kevin Smith Show, we have a members area. Now, it's a radio show, and it's absolutely free to listen to the live radio show. But, you know, in the members area, we have a whole lot of other goodies for you. For one thing, it's set up like a social networking site. So you have your own profile page, you have your friends page, you can upload your favorite photos. Right now we can't upload videos, but we're working on that. It is possible for us to do it, but there's some technical things we're working out with that, but that's coming. We have the Video Galaxy, we have the chat room, we have forums, we have the free ebook library. You just download these ebooks, they're yours. The archives of our shows are there. Plus, you get to watch the shows and the live shows, and you get to watch the latest show, and you get to hear the latest show if you prefer just listening to it. So there's lots and lots and lots of reasons why you ought to become a member at The Kevin Smith Show. And it is excessively expensive. It will cost you the princely sum of 23 cents per day. 23 cents. Take that to the store and see what you can get for it. Nothing. Bring it to the Kevin Smith Show members area and see what do you get. Unbelievable bounty. 23 cents a day, $6.95 a month. So if you click where it says join, you don't have to actually join there. I mean, you can just look and see what's there. Click that, and you'll see a list of some of the things in the members area, and you'll also see comments by people who are members and what they think about the members area. It's been big in the news, hasn't it, about the UFO that shut down the Chinese airport. We're going to talk about that tonight with Robert Morningstar on the other side of this break. We'll be back. My guest this evening is Robert Morningstar, and everyone, I think, at the Kevin Smith Show, if you've been listening to the show for any length of time, you know Robert Morningstar, and even those of you who are brand new to the show tonight, you know Robert Morningstar. He is the editor of UFO Digest. He is a researcher and writer. He's a sought-after speaker. Robert, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you, Kevin. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Let me get our audio leveled out just a little bit here. All right. Robert, one of the big things that has been in the news very, very much here lately is this UFO that shut down the airport in, yes. I believe it's in Xi'an, China.
Xi'an.
Xi'an.
Mm-hmm. You pronounce it like S-H-E, Xi'an.
Xi'an, okay.
Xi'an, yeah.
All right, so...
The ancient capital of China.
All right. Now, you... I mean, everybody knows about this. It's all over the internet. There's video, there's pictures, there's articles. You know, as usual, you know, there are people saying, oh, well, it really wasn't a UFO. It was this, it was that. And there are people saying it was a UFO. One of the things I heard was it was a super top secret Indian aircraft. And that story is about the most untenable I've heard. Because
you want a nuke in its lap.
Well, China would take great exception to that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. There's been a constant tension between India and China for 30 years. You know, they've had their skirmishes repeatedly over the border. So I don't think that that story holds water. And the people who say that it's a strobe light of an airliner and a time-lapse picture, all the pictures look alike, and they're taken from so many very different vantage points. It's a pretty consistent structure and apparent size. Remarkable, yes, it shut down the airport for about an hour, and nobody knows what or why. I think it's a very exciting event, especially since I visited that city in 1986. And my visit to that city was driven by my quest to find the origins of Tai Chi Chuan.
Okay, now before we get into that, and I do want us to get into that because, folks, this is a very, very interesting story that Robert's going to share with us about his visit to that city. But before we get into that, Robert.
Sure.
There is no indication that the people at the airport in China responded anywhere near like what took place at O'Hare in Chicago.
Right.
In Chicago, you know, everybody saw it. People are taking pictures of it. Airline employees, including pilots, report it. And then the FAA comes out and says, well, nobody reported it to us. We didn't see anything, and perhaps it was a weather anomaly.
Right.
They didn't do this in China.
No, they're very forthright, you know.
But wait a minute. Isn't this a closed, communist country where they don't have freedom of speech? Isn't that the case?
Well, that's what we've been told, but apparently this issue is not one of those forbidden topics anymore in China, whereas it still seems to be a forbidden topic here.
Well, you realize I said that with my tongue firmly planted in my cheek. In many ways, and I am certainly not communist nor pro-communist, but in many ways what we've been told about that country is not true.
It's changing very rapidly.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, and that's the case. It is changing very rapidly.
Yeah.
All right, now, there's sort of a backstory about Xi'an that involves you, and you started to tell us about it, and I so rudely interrupted you. But I want the people to hear this. This is fascinating stuff.
Well, to get this in context, I have to backtrack a bit into the early my early history, I suppose. It's now 30 years later, 40 years later. My God, I started martial arts in 1969 when I saw a demonstration of praying mantis kung fu. I had never seen anything on the planet Earth that looked like what I saw. This praying mantis boxer, and the idea that it was boxing was otherworldly. They call it Chinese boxing, kung fu.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, I was seeing something that reminded me of a hieroglyphic coming to life, like an Egyptian hieroglyphic coming to life, or something really alien. So I began to explore kung fu and wound up within a couple of years studying kung fu from the grandmaster of a very famous Shaolin school called the Black Tiger System. And they developed me very, very rapidly. I had an aptitude for this and a great love for the vitality, the exhilaration of the school of kung fu. But at the same time, it was very ferocious, and it started to change my character. It started to make me more aggressive and more egotistical. And it was something that's so different that it seemed like possession at times, that this tiger, black tiger character, would jump into my skin and try to do things with force, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I recognized that as something alien, something other. At the same time, this is now 72, 73, the friend with whom I joined the school, we both were on the same quest, introduced me to a Tai Chi master who visited my home. When I went to meet him, I thought this fellow was about 28 years old, prematurely bald man, very, very...
kind of like me, prematurely bald.
Prematurely bald, yep. Extremely dignified.
Oh, wait, yeah, also, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So I asked him, I told him I'd heard about Tai Chi. In the context of that I'd heard Tai Chi was, A, that it was the oldest martial art in the world, that it was the superior martial art in the world, and defined by the fact that when Tai Chi masters had met the challengers, the Kung Fu masters of all schools, the Tai Chi master was the one that wound up standing up at the end. And that's the criteria of superiority, that you remain vertical and the other guy's horizontal. Okay, so toppling somebody instead of knocking them out, making someone lose their balance and not get up again or too quickly, it's a different thing than punching somebody's lights out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But those things happen too, unfortunately. I've had those experiences, but I try to steer away from them. Well, anyway, this Tai Chi master and I started to meet in really different places in New York City, just by chance, as they say, then twice in one day, and here and there in different places. And he finally said, you know, there seems to be some connection between the two of us, and why don't you come and look at my, look at my Tai Chi class and meet the Tai Chi grandmaster, and because I had a feeling about you, we became friends. So it took me about a year to formally give up kung fu and get formally into the Tai Chi school. But immediately I felt a difference in my life, in my well-being, my sense of what is right with the human body. I'd studied tremendous number of sports, you know, the typical all the American sports, and even foreign sports like soccer and fencing. And although I enjoyed all of them, I never had this feeling that I had when I got into Tai Chi, which was when I was instructed and corrected, I would start to do the movement, and the question would pop up in my mind, why does this feel so right? Now, that's a question, I mean, we always say about sports, well, this feels really good.
Mm-hmm.
But my mind had never reacted to the correctness, like, why does this feel right and everything now starts to feel wrong? And to make a long story short, I was deprogramming neuromuscular patterns that are imposed on us in growing up, in our training, chest out, stomach in, shoulders back, you know, standing with your knees, your legs straight and locked, the military posture, basically, that we call it. And I realized that after World War II, the military body language had kind of permeated our society. And martial arts was really different. You know, you were really practicing different movements, different expressions. And I got this feeling that Tai Chi was it. How else can I put it? And it took me about 7 years of a really intense study of physiology and anatomy to come to the realization of what I had stumbled upon. And basically, in a nutshell, it's the blueprint for the human form. It's the blueprint for the human skeleton as nature designed it to be a locomotive driven by gravity, exercising continuous, circular, perpetual, pendular motion. That's it in a nutshell. We move because of gravity. In locomotion, there are varying degrees of expertise and refinement. And over the years, I had sought to be with no egotism involved. I mean, I've always wanted to be a super athlete and excel in any sport that I could or desired to. And I had my shortcomings, you know. In high school, for example, on baseball, one day I'd be great. I was on, you know, I was like a Mickey Mantle in the outfield, and I swung a bat like Roger Maris, and so on and so forth. And other days, I was lame, you know. I'd be chugging around the bases, my heels stomping the ground, trying to get someplace, and it wasn't happening. But after I started to study Tai Chi and apply its principles and correcting my structure, which is basically what it boils down to, I found that I became a better athlete in anything that I did, anything physical, and the concentration and willpower, of course, that's involved pays off in other mental disciplines. And at the same time, it was a quantum leap in my psychic abilities. This path that I followed into Chinese martial arts actually was an outgrowth of my studying parapsychology while I was at Fordham. I've related to you that I got involved in studies, experiments in artificial intelligence.
Yes.
Well, they changed me, and they kind of put me on a really different path, and this path of self-development and exploring, pursuing psychic development ultimately led me to yoga and Tai Chi and Qigong and the series of mystical experiences that unfold as each of your chakras open up. There are seven chakras, as they call them, and centers of energy in the human body. As each of these unfolded, I would have a rather profound mystical experience, communion with a higher consciousness or quote-unquote cosmic consciousness. And I continued to pursue it. Now, part of these gifts that unfold with Tai Chi, we have a name for one of them now. In Western psychology, and we call it remote viewing or out-of-body experiences. At the same time that I was exploring this, I was reading voraciously, as we spoke about Edgar Cayce this afternoon. I should mention Robert A. Munro of the Cayce Institute, the Association for Research and Enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
And I came across his book, Journeys Out of the Body, and these things had been happening to me already. And, of course, you know, you react and you don't have a handle on things, on how your soul can leave your body, go places, see things, see people, and so on. And throughout the 70s, again, you know the background that my brother was abducted in 1962, so we were always tuned into UFOs. And when I got into Chinese studies, I found that UFOs go back to the very beginning of Chinese history. And I felt, before I go into this thing about what I felt, the first time that I saw Tai Chi, when this Tai Chi master came to my house, I said, look, I've looked for Tai Chi everywhere. I can't even find it, you know. Could you show me some of it? And he said, okay, I'll show you eight moves. And he went into what we call the form. And the form is, when we say the form, it's a capital T and a capital F. And when they spoke of the form, they spoke of it with such reverence and respect and awe that I got the idea that this was something really otherworldly. And in fact, when he started to do it, it appeared otherworldly. I couldn't relate to anything to it, except seeing an astronaut floating in outer space. And that's what I said to myself. My God, that looks like it came from outer space. I remember so clearly, and expressed it just like that. My God, that really looks like it came from outer space. So I was invited by the Master and the Grandmaster to join their group, and I was taken aside by someone and told, listen, man, they don't do that for anybody. I've never heard...
Oh, really? So this was like something really special?
I was told that to study Taiji and get to meet the Grandmaster, you had to visit them for a year, bring them gifts, be very regular and dedicated, serve them before they said, okay, well, this was a different story. Apparently, this Master Yang Jiecheng recognized me from another life, dare I say, or that I had something in me that was part and parcel of what they had or what they were looking for. I like to say I was just a good piece of granite or a good piece of marble, and they figured, well, we can polish this one up into something. So my friend was aghast, and he said, man, if you don't accept, you're a fool, because they don't do that for anyone. And I said, man, I'm no fool. I know what just happened, and I'm going to accept.
All right. Robert, we have to step away for a break. And that's a good place for us to take a breath and step away.
And that's how my training began.
Okay, we'll pick up there when we come back. And, folks, this story links far into the past and bounces right back up to this UFO that just was seen over the Chinese airport. We'll be back right after this. Right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Robert Morningstar, and Robert was telling us about a pretty amazing event that took place, this demonstration of Tai Chi by the Grand Master, and this kind of thing just doesn't happen, and they invited you to come be a part of what they were doing.
Yes, it was.
Okay, so we don't run out of time. Take us forward in how this leads you to China.
Okay. Well, during those years, from 72 to 75, when the Grandmaster died, I advanced very rapidly. I dedicated myself completely to it. And during the course of that experience, of that time, I had a rather powerful experience. I was practicing Taoist yoga, which is cultivation of your life force and your generative forces to create qi. And I went through a very intense period of that, and took about 5 weeks. But at the end of 5 weeks, I had a rather remarkable experience. Let's say I dreamed that I was taken into outer space. And while I was in outer space, I was shown a vision or a view of the solar system whereby I could see the Earth, I could see Venus, and I could see the Sun. And then I was taken back to Earth, and I was on Earth, and I was looking at the sky, but the constellations were nothing like what I'd ever seen growing up, in New York and the United States, and I realized that I was in China, and a voice said to me three times, "Remember this sky. You're seeing the sky over China." And then, in a very short amount of time, I was here in America, looking at the sky, and I saw a great difference in the constellations, and I felt that the constellations reflected the differences of our temperament and our histories and our characters, and that something different was shining on China. The stars shone differently on China. And the voice again said, "Remember, you are seeing the stars over China and the stars over the United States all in one night. Remember, you are seeing the stars over China and the stars over the United States in the course of one night." Basically that. Well, I continued to study Tai Chi and research. I learned Chinese. I became fluent in the Chinese language, written and spoken. And I read ancient, or the old style Chinese as they call it, including ancient Chinese. And I pursued the origins of Tai Chi Chuan, the historical origins, which at the time I started studying, the earliest record was 1100 A.D. in the Song Dynasty, when the master, Jianshan Feng, had left his legacy in Xi'an, China. That's where it emerged. So I continued to study Tai Chi, and I became very proficient and in the martial aspects of it, and I discovered that spin, rotation, was a very important element of mastery of Tai Chi. And I developed a dance that I called metaphysical dancing, which was kind of a whirling dervish type of spinning boxing dance where your arms are moving. And very much when you start to spin that quickly and move the arms in all of these different forms, you take on the appearance of one of the Buddhas or Shiva, the multi-armed, four arms coming out of one torso. And I thought I discovered something new. So in the course of that, I showed it to a Tai Chi master, and he just cryptically said to me, "What you've discovered is not the next evolution of Tai Chi. What you've discovered is what Tai Chi came from." And then he just walked away. He didn't want to say anything else about it. A year later, I discovered a poem written in Chinese, written during the Tang Dynasty, describing a dancer coming to the emperor's court and performing this fantastic dance, but bringing only bitter memories to the emperor. And the poet says, "Oh, the poor dancer, you came here 10,000 miles, you traveled to do this, and never did you realize that your dance would only bring back bitter memories and painful part of history to the emperor." And then he describes what happened, and that's where I started to find codes in the poem, which identified the poem and the people with the origins of Tai Chi Chuan. So I became intrigued with these people, the Emperor Xuanzong and the Princess Yang Guifei, who was his chief wife or primary concubine, and supposedly the most beautiful woman in Chinese history, by the way. So I start to study this fellow, Xuanzong, who's got a real weird name, because Xuanzong means mysterious ancestor. He changed his name because he went through something. And like me, I anglicized my name after my initiation during this period, as well with the Lakota Sioux and the Native American Church. I just dropped that there. So the Emperor Xuanzong, I start to study his history, and I found a recorded in the Tang Dynasty records, the annals of the Tang Dynasty, the official history, that the emperor claimed that one night as he was, one evening as he was walking the ramparts of the palace in Xi'an, a moon ship came down and alighted on the palace ramparts. And out of it, the moon people came and started to communicate with him, and they invited him to go to the moon in the moon ship. So he said, sure. He got in the moon ship. And he records with great detail how when the moon ship left the palace of Xi'an, he could see the people, the encampment around the palace walls, encampments and markets and wrestling matches and campfires and people cooking and doing business and all the hubbub of a bizarre-like environment. And he was taken to the moon. And while on the moon, he was entertained by the most beautiful, resplendently robed fairies, he called them, spiritual entities who danced this most beautiful dance that he had ever seen. At the same time, he was hearing this unusual music that he had never heard before. And he was totally entranced. The following morning, they brought him back. And as he came in for the landing, he said that he could see the campfires burning out, the people sleeping, some people stirring, all the activities that he had seen the day before, kind of at rest and getting ready for the beginning of a new day. And when he alighted from the moonship, the first thing he did is he called the Princess Yang Guifei, his concubine, and said, "I just had the most marvelous experience. I've gone to the moon with the moon people, and I saw a dance that's the most beautiful thing in the world, and I want you to learn it before I forget it, and I'm going to write down the music before I forget it." So he just became obsessed with this. And shortly thereafter, this princess became the primary proponent of something that was called rainbow dancing, or Ni Shang Yu Yi Wu, which means the dance of the rainbow clothing and the feathered garments, because this is how the fairies were attired when he saw them dance. And it turned out to be a very fast, spinning, whirling dervish type of dance, which was then lost when the revolution broke out. It became a very powerful political movement, and it threatened the Tang Dynasty. Ultimately, the revolution of the rainbow dancing movement brought down the Tang Dynasty, and for that reason it was remembered with great bitterness by the emperor who saw the dancer in the poem that I've referred to. The interesting thing, for me, it was a wonderful period of my life in that I was recovering a dance that had not been seen on Earth for 1,200 years. And the manner in which I did this was, Chinese is an ideographic language. You draw a picture of what you're talking about. In English, we draw a picture of the sound, and then we associate the sound with the meaning. In Chinese, you talk about a horse, you draw a horse. It's stylized, of course, with the strokes of Chinese. Mm-hmm. But from the ancient times, it's a contraction, you might say, a more efficient way of writing it, an abstract way of writing a horse or a woman or a child or a man. For example, a man is just two lines, like a Y upside down,
mm-hmm.
right?
No.
Well, that's a man walking. That's the Ren. And then there's another one, which is a line with a curved line on top of it, and it's a standing man, and the curved line is actually his hair. So anyway, I mastered the Chinese language, dare I say, mastered. I became very proficient in the Chinese language, especially the radicals, which are the fundamental characters, and the writing. And I was able to translate this poem. And the characters, which describe whirling, spinning, twirling, walking steps, they were actually steps and patterns in the character that helped me recover the dance. Each character was a unique geometry and gave a step and a pattern, and thereby I was able to recover the rainbow dancing. And the rainbow dancing actually amplified. Already, as I said, was on this quest to develop myself into a full human being.
And the rainbow dancing, as it turns out, is the origins of Tai Chi. Is that right?
Yes, it is. And now we come back to my impression when I saw the Tai Chi master doing it for the first time. I heard only the word Tai Chi and heard about how it was used in self-defense. And here I see it for the first time, and I say to myself, my God, that looks like it came from outer space. And now, about 8 years later, I discover a poem and a historical account that says, yeah, it looked like it came from outer space because it did come from outer space. It came from the moon and the moon people.
Now, you made a trip to Xi'an to visit the tomb of this princess, didn't you?
Right, right. Because the names of the Tai Chi Chuan postures, there's one thing called the form. And within the form is a prescribed sequence of postures and transitions which make it an entity, a one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But they have mysterious names, like grasp the sparrow's tail, the golden cock stands on one leg, the fairy weaving at the shuttles. The sword form is marvelous. It has names like divinity points the way, three rings around the moon, scraping the moon from the sea bottom, or sculpting the moon from the sea bottom, spirit searches the sea, and so on. It's really rather astronomical. Oh, yeah, shooting star chases the moon. So it's all these astronomical references in the Tai Chi sword form, which is a very high-level form of the art that you don't take up until you've done it for at least 5 or 6 or 7 years. So the upshot was that the irony was that my soul, my eyes, recognized this thing to have originated in from the celestial realms, and the princess was hanged. You know, when the revolution broke out, the emperor's army refused to fight because they felt that all the trouble had been brought about by this princess's relatives, the Yang family. And so they said, look, you've got to get rid of the Yangs or else we're not going to support you.
All right. We're going to step away for break, and we'll pick up at the revolution when we come back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Robert Morningstar, and Robert, you were telling us about the princess being executed. Are you with me, Robert? Well, ladies and gentlemen, I was just talking with him during the break. I don't know what has happened to him. Let me try pushing a button here, and it shows that, at least I think it shows, let me see, I think it shows he is still on. There we go. Okay, Robert, are you with us now? It shows that he's active online, but he's not there. All right, well, we will hang up and reconnect with him. And we'll see what happens. Well, we're getting his voicemail, so I don't know what the deal is. I was just talking with him during the break, and maybe 20 seconds before we came out of the break, I was talking with him, and everything was just fine. So I don't know. I didn't push any buttons, we'll try it again. Let's see. Yeah, I don't know what happened, Robert. You know, I was just talking with you during the break.
Yeah, I heard a couple of clicks, and then it was gone. Okay, I'm back now.
Okay. So the princess was executed, and
right.
We're going to have to kind of accelerate to get to...
So I identified her as the princess she was the person in the form known as the Jade Lady or the Fairy Weaving at the Shuttles. So I did a pilgrimage. I went to pay my respects to her. And make a long story short, it took a long time to get there, and it was a little town near where she was executed. And I got there in the middle of the night, and they woke up this little old Chinese guy who was the caretaker of the place, and they said to him, "This man's come all the way from America to honor the princess. Please let him in." And he let me in, and I performed Tai Chi at the gravesite at midnight or later, And when I stood back in meditation and then looked up at the sky, it was the sky I had seen 12 years before during that experience of seeing the Earth from outer space and being in America and China in the same day. And that was a very, very powerful spiritual experience for me. And then I came back to the United States. By the way, just prior to going to Xi'an, I had done my dissertation in Tai Chi for my mastership, or what we would call a PhD, with the highest ranking masters of China in the Yang family in Shanghai. And I told them basically what I told you, and they said, "My God, how do you know this?" I said, "This is the way I did it. I learned Chinese. I found this poem." And then they opened up and shared some more of the Yang family secrets with me and acknowledged me as a master of the Yang family. So
So you are a Tai Chi master?
Yes, sir, I am. And I'm acknowledged by the Hong Kong Tai Chi Masters Association and the World Tai Chi Day Association. And it's a very big part of my life, and I feel it's the greatest thing I have to share with anyone. And in the coming months, I am returning fully to instructing and to enlisting future instructors and masters of Tai Chi, because it's something that the world really needs. It is not something that is Chinese. My teacher always said, "This is universal." And I said to you, I think it's the blueprint for the human form. And that's why I call it Adam's Walk.
And Tai Chi, from your research into this and into its history, those who began what is Tai Chi did so, according to them, based on having received this knowledge, this information, from extraterrestrials.
Yes, indeed. What are moon people?
Yeah, moon people. Now, there's also a link to the Apollo program, right?
Oh, yes. Very few people get it, but it was a very strange communication that Houston called up Apollo 11 on the way there and told them to be on the lookout when they got to the moon for a Chinese princess and a big rabbit who took her to the moon, who kidnapped her in ancient times, because this princess had stolen the elixir of immortality, and she had started to levitate, and this, as they called it, a large rabbit that stood on two legs hijacked her or kidnapped her, abducted her to the moon. And her name was Chang'o, and the Apollo astronauts were advised by Houston Control to be on the lookout for this Chinese princess when they got to the moon. So there's a lot of really strange, cryptic, mysterious things underlying the moon program, including legend and lore. You will recall.
All right, now, but yeah, I want to ask you about this now.
Okay.
And this may be what you're about to bring up, but I want to ask you about the a couple of years ago, the thing all the rage on the internet in the UFO community had to do with the release of some video that was alleged to be Apollo 20, which, right, according to the story, was all very, very secret, hush-hush, nobody knew about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they went there to look for this couple of things, a downed spaceship, which had been photographed, I believe, by Apollo 15 and 17, and then, which those photographs do exist, and it looks like something similar to that. But in these Apollo 20 videos, which a lot of people are saying are hoaxed, and maybe they are, one of them shows that the astronauts had recovered the body of a female.
Right.
And she looked very, to me, Asian.
Well, you can imagine how I felt when I saw those photographs, knowing already what I've told you. I said, oh my God, did they find the princess Chang'o and bring her back? It is remarkable. It looked to me like a mummy. The lips were sewn together, so it was something through the nostrils, and quite a lot of work to unbind that. Now, I'm not an adherent to the Apollo 20 story. There are too many flaws in the story. For me, the main one is that William Rutledge fled to Africa and forgot how to speak English from spending 20 years in Africa, and that his syntax and his grammar was affected by that. I couldn't buy that part of it. But I thought that perhaps it was one of those cover stories where they expose something with plausible deniability to put the idea in the subconscious of well, us, the human race at this time, was kind of preparing us for it. But that princess, the body of that purported princess or corpse they brought, mummy they brought back from the moon, struck me very deeply.
What do you think? You've seen the video. I looked at it again today.
Uh-huh.
Do you think that that entire video is staged? Do you think it's hoaxed? Or is that real film of somebody that actually went to the moon and actually found that body? And they're just releasing it under hoaxed information.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's some film, some of the color footage is actually shot of going over the moon, but then there's a flash of white, and it changes slightly. And my objection to that being real is that the spacecraft hovers, you know, it kind of loiters over. It's for a certain period of time. It loiters over the purported crashed spaceship on the dark side of the moon. And knowing what I know about fuel consumption in the Apollo, the LEM, the mm-hmm. module, I really don't believe it could loiter that long and stay shooting video or 8mm movie that long. But as I mentioned to you earlier, one of the things that intrigued me as I've gone to great lengths to study the Apollo program, and I've seen a lot of really unusual things. One of the things that struck me is a photograph that I saw of something that was purportedly brought back by Apollo 14. And it was a single photograph of something laid out on a table, as if it looked to me like a torso that was covered in plaster.
All right. We'll pick up there when we come back. And very shortly, folks, we're going to open up the telephone lines for you. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and for those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad you're here. My sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away from something far more important. And I said that tongue-in-cheek. Don't send me nasty email for that, please. Oh, well, go ahead and send it. It's okay. We're talking with Robert Morningstar, I hope. Are you still with us, Robert?
I am here.
All right. Now, you were telling us about something that was brought back on Apollo 14.
Well, it's never been identified. I only saw a photograph of it in one of those NASA sites many years ago. And it was very intriguing. It looked like something laid out. To me, it looked like a body plaster cast laid out on a table or some kind of support. And I've never been able to find anyone who could tell me what it was. And since that time, the hard drive in which I had that photo crashed, so I still keep looking for it. And but you know, once you've seen something, it stays in your memory if it's some kind of significant.
So what do you think? Do you think there's a possibility? Is there a possibility that they? I mean, a real sort of plausibility and possibility that they have found some kind of a humanoid body on the moon? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I believe that. I believe it's possible. You know, Hoagland found wreckage of a head that looked like Data on Star Trek in one of the craters.
No, it was 3CPO from Star Trek from Star Wars.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
It was the C-3PO head, and that one photograph has a lot of strange, kind of mechanical looking objects scattered around that site. So I wouldn't be surprised if they did find something and bring it back and just keep mum. The reason I mentioned the plaster cast, or what I took to be a plaster body cast, is that the way it was laid out and the shape of it and the posture of it was reminiscent of later when I saw this purported picture of the woman of from the moon, you know, the oriental-looking Tibetan kind of looking Tibetan goddess-looking kind of person, the mummy that we talk about with
Apollo 20.
So maybe Apollo 20 was showing us, it's like the cover story, so that they could present it, but maybe it was brought back by one of the other missions.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about this, I just want
to... Yeah, we need to go to the phone now pretty quick because we have people on hold.
Quickly. Apollo 17 flew into the Taurus-Littrow Valley, and there are photographs, 3D photographs, that show areas that look like collapsed pyramids. In the city, in the Xi'an area, the biggest pyramid we know of is near Xi'an. There's a pyramid complex there, and Westerners, no one is allowed there. But the pyramid was discovered in World War II by a C-47 photo plane that broke out of the clouds near Xi'an and saw a 1,000-foot-high pyramid, which is called the White Pyramid. And that is where the princess, the empress Wu Tang, is buried, so they say nowadays.
Okay.
So
we need to go to the phone.
With this. Sure.
Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hello, Terry.
Hi. I got a little serious pun for you at first here. When you stepped away a little bit ago, you said you'd be back with the revolution. I just wondered, I know you know that the revolution is not being televised, don't you? I got the T-shirt to prove it.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Which revolution are you talking about? We were talking about a Tang Dynasty revolution in 750 A.D.
Yeah. No, America, or the worldwide, you know, whatever. Sir, you know, I was listening to you, and, you know, forgive me, but, you know, it sounds, you know, more like, you know, something like Alice in Wonderland, Looking Glass kind of a story. I know a little more about India, you know, and their folklore about flying saucers and stuff. Uh-huh. And you spoke of something that you said you've seen a vision that you all was in China and America together. What mean is that? What does that bring forth for us?
Well, it means to me that the journey occurred always on the dark side of the earth as the earth was rotating. So it was not really it was saying that I basically traveled in time and loitered in a place where darkness lasted for basically 24 hours, because you to see the sky over China and the sky over the United States, that takes two nights, right? Because it's daytime here and nighttime in China and vice versa. So basically it was a hint that my journey was a rather long journey over the course of 24 hours, whereby I must have been in whichever way it was, whether it was dream or abduction or whatever it was, I had the privilege of seeing the sky over China and the sky, night sky over the United States with no intervening day, and that seemed to be an important element that was communicated to me by a voice of an unseen person. There was another part to it. There was a rather completion to it that that I didn't finish, which was that in this vision, as it was occurring, I found myself in the United States looking at the skies again and the stars here, but I saw a brilliant star approaching, and I knew it was a UFO. And I was walking with someone and told them, look at that star. And I didn't want to, you know, kind of bias their opinions. And it approached. And as it came closer, it changed form into a radiant cobalt blue torus, which is basically the shape of a donut. And it was coming closer and closer. And I said to my friend, my God, it's going to land. So I started running to where the landing point was going to be. And as it approached, it transmogrified. It changed its shape again into a silver bell. And the last 20 feet of my run toward it, it wasn't there. I was just inside it and saw the most brilliant light that anyone could imagine. And suddenly I found, after that manifestation, that vision of this light, it started to fade away, and I said, please, don't go away. I had run toward it, saying, I knew you'd come back. It was a very powerful mystical experience and kind of set me for my trip to Xi'an many years later.
All right. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Well, he lives.
Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Robert. Hey, Kevin. Yeah, it's been a long time. I've been very, very busy. Finally got an evening off where I can actually listen and call into the Kevin Smith Show. Oh, yes, Robert. You know, how do you think we're going to have a lot more of these incidences all around the world? You know, I actually did a little bit of a search of that area of China you were talking about. It actually is in an interesting location. Mm-hmm. But I'll get to that some other time. But do you think we're going to see a lot more of these things as we're getting close to the galactic plane?
I think so. I told Kevin that I was informed about 2 years ago that the ET faction that wants disclosure had given an ultimatum to world government and the United Nations, and that they said that if you don't divulge our presence, if you don't disclose UFO reality to your people willingly, we're going to manifest our ships over some city, perhaps not the United States, but we'll do it over a third world country, and the world media will not be able to escape it, and you'll be embarrassed. Your people will know that you've been lying to them. So I get this feeling that this is it, that this is one of those instances. And of course, we're shielded from so much information about other, I call them manifestations, UFO manifestations. Just recently in London, with quite the interesting video, a gentleman and his wife were in London one night, and they saw 10 to 20 spheres, orbs, making maneuvers and flying off very quickly from the area. So if you go to UFO Digest, you can find that article and see the video. Argentina, Peru, Mexico, they're having their regular flybys, and the media here ignores it, but they didn't ignore the Xi'an incident, even though they were very smirky and snarky on CNN today, you know, the gigglers, you know, mm-hmm. Laughing, what are we going to do about this? Conspiracy theories, you know, they start dropping these loaded words to try to discredit, but the fact is they showed four pictures of this UFO over Xi'an and casting a brilliant, brilliant light downward.
Well, you know where the giggles come from, don't you? The giggles. See, there cannot be a vacuum, okay? There really cannot be a vacuum. And so where IQ is missing, the universe has dumped giggles in there?
I see. Well, I hate to say it, I giggle sometimes.
Well, Kevin, you have another comment or question very quickly?
Yeah, I just want to know that the mainstream media has a good way of getting people to ignore things like that. They just shove it into the conspiracy theory bin, and everybody ignores it.
Well, that's exactly what he said. You know, a conspiracy theory. And then this guy Jackson, he says, "Oh, wouldn't it be a beautiful world if we had no conspiracy theories?" You know, And I said, no, it wouldn't.
It would be a boring world.
Oz. Yeah. You're talking about living in Oz.
All right, Kevin, thank you for the call. Good to hear from you again. 623-444-5889. That's the main number here in the studio, 623-444-5889. The toll-free number throughout the USA and Canada, if you need to call me toll-free, is 888-223-4599. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, the main number will work for you, and we'd love to hear from you. Or, because I don't have international toll-free number, you can go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down, and where it says flash message, you can send me a flash message, and I'll get your comments or questions that way. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Robert, I have a question for you.
Sure.
You're a Tai Chi master, right?
Yes, sir.
Can Chi be used to clean up the Gulf of Mexico? And or could it have been used to construct any number of the great megalithic structures throughout the world under the right circumstances and with a true master?
I believe so, but we have to understand that the word qi is a generic word for energy. The literal meaning of the character when you write it in Chinese means steam. And in terms of the human being, we believe that the qi is a living steam which creates a pressure inside the body, which animates it and keeps the body full, kind of inflated, you might say, with life, and keeps the atmosphere from and gravity from collapsing us into a ball. And when this pressure is vibrant and alive, we are animate, and when we die, what happens? We decompose, you see. So they see the qi leaving the body as the cause of death. Now, qi involves steam, magnetism, electricity, radiation. Matter has different degrees of qi, but it would take quite a concentration. And yes, qi can be used, it will be used, which is the concentration of human effort toward a common goal with one will. So if we dedicate ourselves and become a United States mentally and spiritually and in will, we can all work together and use our qi to purify the Gulf much more rapidly than it will if it's just left to chance. Or
all right, Brent, do you have another question or comment?
Yes, I do. A few weeks ago, there was a yogi in India who was taken to a hospital and said he hadn't eaten or drank anything mm-hmm. in several decades. Would that mm-hmm. be an example of qi?
Well, yes, but I would say that this is called breatharianism, and some people accuse me of it, which is you master the breath, and the breath is the primary source of life, not food. Water is an essential, so I find it hard to believe that this man didn't drink any water for decades. I could believe that he didn't eat food for decades, but I can't believe that he did not drink water for decades, because water is life, and without it, qi doesn't function.
Okay.
Breatharianism is a philosophy of developing such great breath control that you derive 80-90% of your life force, your sustenance, from air itself. But water is an essential element as well.
All right. Thanks, Brent. The telephone lines are open. We're talking with Robert Morningstar. Robert Morningstar is a Tai Chi master. He is also the editor of UFO Digest. He is a researcher and writer and lecturer. And he's been sharing with us a pretty strange journey that he was on, and that took him through Xi'an, China. And there is sort of a connection with this UFO that appeared over their airport and shut down right. their airport there.
Yeah, people said to me, why there? Why Xi'an? Well, I said to you, A, it's the ancient capital of China. B, there's huge pyramidal structures. The pyramid there is bigger than twice as big as the one in Egypt. They didn't really build a pyramid. They took a mountain and shaved off the sides. Kind of smart, right?
Well, yeah.
All those stones. This is also the area where they found the tomb of the Emperor Qin Shi Huang and the 10,000 soldiers, you know, the terracotta soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
I visited that.
He's the first emperor.
The first emperor, Qin Shi Huang. China is called China because of this gentleman's name, Qin.
Yeah.
China, you know, China.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I would like to mention that the oldest village in the oldest prehistoric village in China, Banpo Village, which I believe is supposed to be 50,000 years old, is also there. So life has been very active around Xi'an for many thousands of years. You might say that it's one of the cradles of civilization, in my estimation, which is why it became the ancient capital of China until the five kingdoms were united and one emperor took over, and then they moved the capital to Beijing. But Xi'an also was the terminus of the Silk Road, so culturally Xi'an was one of the most intriguing places on the planet Earth because it received the knowledge and the commerce and the culture all the way from Persia, from Samarkand to Xi'an. It's known as the Silk Route.
Mm-hmm.
And in ancient times, between China and Persia, northern India, southern Russia, in that area, there was a fantastic kingdom called Khwarezm, which was destroyed by Genghis Khan and obliterated. And Khwarezm was a center of culture that drew from the southern Russian culture, from northern India, and from Persia and China and Tibet. So it must have been an incredible culture, but it was completely demolished, destroyed, decimated by the Mongols.
All right, now, the first emperor lived, well, let's say the first emperor died in about what year?
Well, it depends on whether you're talking about the legendary emperors or the historical emperors. The legendary emperors are the Yellow Emperor, the Emperor Yu, and Fuxi, and that would go from about 2600 BC to about 1900 BC.
Now I'm talking about Qin.
Qin would be about 1500 BC.
Okay. Now he's at 1500 BC, and the princess, who is the origin of Tai Chi,
she's in 750 A.D.
750 A.D.
Yeah, so that's about 2,200 years
mm-hmm.
between the Qin and the Tang.
All right. Now, before the story that you told us is that basically her rainbow dance was something received by the emperor, but received from the moon people while he was visiting on the moon.
Yes,
so we have a very clear historical connection to extraterrestrials. Now, there are people that will say, well, that might be mythology. So what is still a historical, clear connection, whether it was mythological or not? There it is in history that's the claim. All right. Before him, were there extraterrestrial connections to this area?
Sure. I mentioned that one of the great emperors of China, the legendary emperors, one named Yu, the hero Yu, the story is that five suns appeared over China, and they were radiating and burning the land and destroying crops, and that the kingdom was being oppressed by these five suns, and that Yu developed a mighty bow and fired arrows and shot down four of the suns, leaving only one sun in the sky. and save China, and that's why he's called the Hero Yu. If you look in Chinese graphics and mythology, you'll often see a very powerfully muscled individual with long black hair aiming a bow and arrow of incredible size to shoot the five suns. And there's a form that is modeled on him where they make these postures. As a matter of fact, one of the forms in Tai Chi Chuan is called bend the bow and shoot the tiger.
All right. Now, what I'm getting at with this is that we sit here in 2010. We're in the West. And to us, to most of us, Asian culture, and particularly Chinese culture, is fascinating, but mysterious, because, you know, we don't rub up against it every day.
Right.
And so it's a bit mysterious to us. But the point is that what we're seeing in Chinese culture has very ancient roots in extraterrestrial contact.
Oh, absolutely. They believe they believe that Chinese writing came from heaven, and that there was an antecedent script to Chinese that's called the celestial writing, and that knowledge was downloaded basically regularly by their interaction with these spirit beings. They have a lot of, well, we call it mythology, but, you know, we get reports every day about alien shapeshifters and creatures that can change their forms, turn invisible, appear, disappear. I was telling you a story about a hunter in China whose cabin was being bothered by these really strange creatures that kept showing up every night, first bright lights, and then they'd be bothering him.
All right, we have to step away for break, Robert. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Robert Morningstar. Robert, I had to cut you off in mid-sentence, and I want to give you the chance to finish your thought.
Okay, it was a story I was telling that I read recently in a book by a Chinese lady giving an account of what it was like to grow up a woman in China in the early part of the 20th century. And she related a story of a Chinese hunter, a hermit, let's call him. He lived by hunting, who was oppressed by these very strange frog-looking... He said they looked like frogs that walked on 2 feet, and they kept bothering the man. So he got his chi up and got fed up with it, and he set some traps, and he trapped them. And he killed them and ate them. And they stopped bothering him. And I thought that was a pretty fascinating...
Now, the others got the message, didn't they?
Yeah, they didn't come around. And actually, I've heard stories, modern stories, about people, some of them known to you personally, who were so bothered by intruders of the gray persuasion that they just got fed up, grabbed a Japanese samurai sword, and hacked away and dispatched them. And apparently, from the account, when they are dispatched, they dissolve very rapidly. And I've heard that more than once, by the way.
All right, I have a flash message from Australia from Carl.
Okay.
And Carl says, and by the way, Carl, thanks for the flash message. People in the United States have suffered an anesthesis attack. And the entire United States of America is asleep, absolutely asleep. I think probably whatever gas was used has floated over into Canada as well. I believe they're asleep. But Carl in Australia says, I would like to say this is more than an interesting show. It is also beautiful. Robert, can you say why the moon people danced? I know that I sound like a toddler for asking why, but why?
Well, you know, that's a remarkable question. You might as well ask why I dance or why anyone else dances. Dancing shakes up your molecules in such a way that you start to feel the difference between your material self, your breath, your living self, your soul, and your spirit. And one of the objects of rainbow dancing is to commune with God, very much in the same way that Sufis, the mystical order of the Sufi order, which antedates Islam, by the way. The Sufis go back to Abraham,
uh-huh.
who is the father of Sufism. But that having been said, rotation is a very important element of many mystical systems. And while I'm on the subject...
Okay, let me say to the caller, just hang on, we'll get to you in a second. Okay, Robert, okay. Go ahead.
Okay, I had an encounter with Edgar Mitchell, wherein he recounted his epiphany coming back from the moon. And I had gone there specifically to hear it from the horse's mouth, you might say. But one of the things he said was that, well, you know, when he finished his 9 hours on the moon, his job was done, and he had just a nice ride home. He didn't have any tasks. So he sat in his capsule just riding home, but he said the capsule was spinning and that he would look through the window and he'd see the stars and he'd see the sun and he'd see the earth and he'd see the stars and then he'd see the sun and he'd see the moon. And the way he did it was almost hypnotic, and I said to myself, holy mackerel, he had a kind of kundalini experience in the space capsule, probably induced by the rotation of the space capsule, just the same way that it happens to Sufi masters and rainbow dancers. And I voiced it to him. I said, you know, rotation is a very big part of systems of attaining enlightenment. And he was a bit shocked, you know. He's like, oh, my God. And I said, but I quickly said, but, sir, this in no way diminishes from the validity of your experience. And he was able to get it back together.
Yeah.
It was kind of shocking to him that his enlightenment could have come about from a mechanical event. But
all right, we need to go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Not asleep here, Kevin. This is Tony from Denver.
Tony, well, folks in Denver are awake and alive. That's good. That's good. I guess the gas has not gotten to you guys yet because you're so high up.
The mountains are keeping them away.
Yeah.
So, thanks for calling. What's your question?
This is the second time the UFOs have flown over airports, the first being O'Hare.
Right.
And, Robert, I'm not familiar with the story of your brother's abduction in 1962. Will you tell me a quick version of the story? Thank you, Mr.
Well, a little boy went to a summer in the country at on a farmer's house with Fresh Air Fund, New York Times Fresh Air Funds. It wasn't that. It was a church-organized thing. And the 7-year-old boy became distraught after a week and a half there and came back crying and neurotic, I would say, upset, angry. And he told me, when I took him aside, I said, what happened? He said, I got scared. I heard some voices in the middle of the night, and I went to the window, and there were these little guys about high, as big as the flowers, and they had big black eyes, and they tried to hypnotize me and said, we're not here, you don't see us, we're only flowers. We're not here, you don't see us, we're only flowers. And then apparently they came in and took him away, and he fought very, very violently against them, and so powerfully, 7-year uncontrollably, that they relented and put him back. But he didn't want to spend another day there. And this was a time long before Whitley Strieber and communion. And in fact, that was from 62 to 85. We're talking about 23 years later. I saw Whitley Strieber's book in a store. And I said to myself, my God, that looks like what my brother was talking about. And 4 hours later, he ran into the house with the book, saying, Robert, this is what I saw when I was 7 years old in Friendlytown. So that's how far back our my experience of abductions and UFOs and the psychic element underlying the phenomenon goes. And I share that with others. It's actually, and it bothers me very much, the abduction of children and the traumatization of children, like happened to my brother. And it was actually the abduction of a little girl in BC, British Columbia, a bunch of years ago. And an article that was posted on UFO BC that brought me out into the public. The death of John Mack and this article about this the abduction of this young girl, and apparently her mother, by Grays in British Columbia, brought me into the public arena to share what I know about this, because I have worked with scores of people who have found me over a period of time, a period of years, seeking relief from the strain, the trauma, the agony, dare I say it, of some of them. And they have come to Tai Chi to find relief, and in the process of Tai Chi, they reveal themselves to me as having had alien abduction experiences that they would not voice to anyone.
All right, we need to go to the phone.
Comfortable with me.
Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Ryan in Puget Sound.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi, guys. How you guys doing?
Good. Good.
Okay.
Well, you know, I although I think that there was a UFO over the Chinese airport that was on radar that shut it down, I do think that it's probable that there, likely that the photographs we're seeing could be not related or time exposures, because I had seen some people that had looked at those, and although I think that there was something anomalous there, I think that the photographs are not from, unfortunately, I think that some of them are not what people saw that night.
Mm-hmm. Well, I disagree with you. We weren't there, and people who were there took photographs, and they say this is what I saw that night. So I don't see how you can make that statement. I've read the accounts saying that it's airliners leaving streaks, but if you look closely at the photographs, the craft is not streaked. The lights on the side of the craft are quite distinct and remain in place. And these are photos that are taken by several different people, and there is a consistency to the appearance of the red lights on the side and the long white light on the underside. So, you know, I respect your opinion, but I disagree with it.
Fair enough.
Sure.
Well, I guess we agree to disagree on that, which is fine.
Sure.
Everybody's entitled to their own opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that there was something there, though. I had differences on that.
Yeah, you know, you don't shut down a major airport for nothing.
But I'm leaning to put all my efforts into supporting what Robert Hastings and Bob Salas are doing right now. I think that the amount of secrecy is so deep that if we can at least get some attention to what they're doing, then I think if everybody could pitch in a little bit of help towards what they're doing, I think it would do a great deal for what we're doing.
I support Robert Hastings and Robert Salas wholeheartedly. They're very good friends and colleagues. And as a matter of fact, we awarded Robert Hastings UFO Writer of the Year Award for UFOs and Nukes in 2008, or was it early 2009? Fabulous book, and very brave men, both of them, to continue to bring this this issue to the public attention. I mean, what good are nukes if a UFO can come in and rearrange the target? That's basically what they've been showing, and it's a hint. Like, you fire this nuke, you don't know where it's going to land, and it might just land in your own backyard. So I think that's a very clear message about the futility of nuclear war.
All right. Ryan, thank you for the call. Yes, Let me give the telephone numbers again. Our telephone number here in the studio is 623-444-5889. Toll free at 888-223-4599. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? You know what? Hang on, caller. It would help if Kevin in the Kevin Smith studio would push the button. So your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Gwen in Texas.
Gwen, if we can get that Kevin guy to work instead of sleep on the job, everything will be just fine, but I don't know.
Have another drink of coffee. Hi, how are you, Robert?
Yeah, fine. I had my coffee before the show.
I have a question. I was looking at a couple of maps and trying to figure out if Xi'an and Chicago are on the same latitude. And I was wondering if you might know the answer to that. And
Think about that. No, I don't think they are.
Okay. No. Okay.
More south than Chicago would be.
Okay, but they are in a similar, area. They're awful close. At least it looks like on the map that I have. I'm curious to know what you...
Here's the way I...
Okay, both of you, hang on, and we'll be back after this break, okay, folks? Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Robert Morningstar. And, Robert, are you still on the line with me?
Yeah. Is Gwen still there?
We'll find out.
Yes,
are you
I
still?
Am.
All right.
Okay, here's your answer.
Okay.
I was correct that Xi'an is a little south, farther south than Chicago. Xi'an is at 35 north, and Chicago is at 41.98 north. That's about 7-8 degrees, almost 8 degrees, almost 7 degrees. And as far as lat long, Chicago is 87.75 west, and Xi'an is 108.54 east. So that's about 190. You're kind of close. It's like 10 degrees off the 180, and about 6 off on the latitude. Why did you ask about that in Chicago? You mean O'Hara Airport connected?
That's right, yes.
Ah, you're one of the trackers, right? Ley lines and... Yeah, I know. You know, what I'm referring to is that Aimé Michel and Jacques Vallée and people like that were tracking UFOs, and they found that they were following certain lines or parallels in their flights. And this gave birth to the idea that they're riding the acupuncture meridians of the Earth, you might say. The Earth has chi, and that there are meridians as well, rather than just the lat long meridian. There are energy meridians that the UFOs may be riding. So right on, Gwen. Good question.
Well, thank you for your answer. I appreciate it. That's very interesting. Very interesting. Well, thanks a lot. Good night, guys.
All right, Gwen. Thanks. Carl over in Australia has sent us a flash message response. He says, "Oh my God, Robert, my brother had the same experience. Also, many years before Whitley Strieber's book, he told us of the quote cockeyed roach at the window. Wow!" And then he says, "Cue Twilight Zone music."
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm glad you said that word, Kevin, because I wanted to return to the moon for a moment. You remember that the Emperor Xuanzong said that he'd heard this beautiful music that, when he came back from the moon. He wrote it down. Later it became forbidden to sing the song under penalty of death during the revolution, but I wanted to touch on this. This music was heard by Apollo astronauts. And this is one of the really interesting, intriguing parts of the Apollo 10 mission. Gene Cernan, Tom Stafford, and the third astronaut
heard strange music.
I remember them talking about
that. I told you about this?
You know, I don't remember you telling me, but I remember them talking about it.
Yes, it's in the transcript. Now, here's the thing. The transcript wasn't released publicly until about a year or two ago. It was kept secret, and it's called the VTR transcripts, and VTR stands for voice transmission recorder, and it appears that they were being recorded unbeknownst to them. And a lot of people think that the Apollo astronauts are really stoic military guys and that they've been forced to clam up. Well, folks, the fact is that the cover-up of alien presence on the moon started with the Apollo 10 astronauts. The transcript shows that they all heard it, they all talked about it, they were all mystified by it, especially Cernan, who keeps coming back to it half an hour later, an hour later, saying, "Hey, didn't you hear those guys? What'd you make about that spacey, outer spacey music? Did you hear it?" He kept asking for affirmations. I say, "Yeah, yeah." And then finally, when they're back in the command module, they talk about it again. And they said, "What should we do about this?" And he says, "Well, I don't think we should say anything. I don't think we should report it at all, because nobody would believe us." So right there, Apollo 10, that's where the cover-up began. So, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The bubble of the stoic astronauts. The only one that's telling is Edgar Mitchell.
Well, but now, in fairness, I'm trying to think. Gordon Cooper was also speaking out about this. Of course, he's dead now.
But he's not an Apollo astronaut either.
No, that's true. But he is an astronaut that was very vocal about, mm-hmm. and he didn't just say it's UFOs. He said alien spacecraft.
Right. His book is wonderful. He describes seeing the technology of Avatar back in 1987.
Really?
Yeah. He was working for Walt Disney after he retired in the military. He had several very good positions, and one of them was working for Disney in developing new products. And he saw a guy come in and demonstrate a 3D system movie projection. He said it was the most amazing thing that he'd ever seen. But the Disney said, it's a beautiful concept, but we would have to refit all the theaters in the United States to be able to show this type of film, and they said no to the fellow. But apparently, 20-something, mm-hmm. 22 years later, we did refit all the theaters in the United States, and they probably improved the technology of that 3D.
And now this was Gordon Cooper?
Gordon Cooper, yeah. He wrote mm-hmm. a book, mm-hmm. and he talks about having, he chased UFOs over Germany mm-hmm. In 1952. But he describes UFOs coming down the main street of some of the German towns where he was stationed, and basically the chase was on. And then they just split up there and just hang around at 70,000 feet, and we couldn't go higher with our jets than 35,000, 40,000 feet at the time.
Yeah.
So they were kind of frustrated, and they would see huge armadas or fleets of these UFOs. Just, the way we see the films from Mexico City,
mm-hmm.
from Jaime Maussan.
Yep.
He describes that, fleets of them overflying Germany from east to west and back. And he was sitting in his jet, his F-86 or F-86.
Let's remember that when he was doing that and he was seeing all of that and responding to UFOs, we were not being told about all of that here in the United States.
Right, right. The military never comes forward with it. It's only when people on the outside see it and call them to task, like Stephenville, then they start to make up the stories. But here's the deal, the important thing. The VTR transcripts were released, and I've read them all, And as I say, I assert that the cover-up began in Apollo 10 COPCOM capsule when they agreed not to talk to anybody about the music that they heard on the moon. But
okay, but now 10 didn't land on the moon.
No, it descended to within 8 miles. It was
uh-huh.
a test of the whole system to just before touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
And I recommend to everyone read that. It's a wonderful transcript. They didn't know they were being recorded. It's basically the original technology of the voice cockpit recorder that we have in airliners today. They were afraid that if anything happened to the Apollo capsule on the dark side of the moon or the far side of the moon, we'd never know what happened. But they had this rigged so that if something happened to the astronauts, they could trip the recorder to play back and we would know what had happened, just how we know what happens when airliners crash and we recover the so-called black box.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, that tape has to exist and it has to be gotten.
And if they could hear it, perhaps it's on the tape.
That's right. That's one of my goals now, is to get to hear that tape and hear the music of the moon and find out what intrigued Gene Cernan so much.
Now, I remember reading that when it first came out, and it seems as though, to me, that I remember them commenting that it sounded Oriental or Asian.
Well, what I read of his, he called it outer spacey.
Okay, I remember that. Yeah.
But true. This is the point. I found the music that the emperor wrote. It was discovered. Both the dance and the music were lost for 1,200 years. I discovered the dance, and during that period of time, when I was uncovering, translating the poem to recover the dance, a Chinese archaeologist found a record of the, what is called,
of the music. I wish we had more time, but we don't. The end of the show has taken over. Ladies and gentlemen, my friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until tomorrow, when Jerry Wills will be with me. So long, everybody.